Well, we come together this evening to continue our study through Ecclesiastes, Vanity of Vanities, a biblical philosophy of life. And someone's already mentioned to me, you know, again, that this picture could get quite old, but I hope it hits you as quite old, because that's the whole theme of this book, chapter 1, verse 2. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. That word hevel, the NIV would translate, is meaningless, not a good translation. Your life matters, it's not meaningless, but you know what it is? It's a vapor. That's what this word literally means. It's a vapor, it's quick, then it's gone. Your life is frequently frustrating. It's difficult to understand, and it passes by so quick. Would you go all the way to Ecclesiastes chapter 12 now? And we'll look at the last verse in verses 1 through 8. That'll be the portion we consider tonight, Ecclesiastes 12. We're in this very last chapter. Notice what Solomon, Koheleth, writes in chapter 12, verse 8. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. All is vanity. He begins the book 1-2, Vanity of Vanities, and he basically ends it in 12-8. There's an ending after that. The purpose is explained. We'll talk about that, Lord willing, next time. But we're right back to the same point. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. All is vanity. My life is vain. Your life is vain. It's a vapor. It goes by so quickly. And I think I'm safe in saying every one of us have experienced things that are difficult. We've gone through challenges that we don't understand, we find frustrating. That's all part of the vanity of this life. So the question is then, how do we live these vain life, this vain life? And that's chapter 11. It's wrapping things up. This is a quick review. Chapter 11, verses 1 through 6. Live a life of faith. You know, some people just, they suffer, and everybody suffers in this life. You can't get through it without suffering. And some people kind of pull back, and they get stuck in the past, or they're overcome with anxiety over the future. And Solomon says, no, you need to live a life of faith. I'm not going to read verses 1 through 6. I've reviewed that already from last time. But live boldly, wisely, enthusiastically, confidently, realistically, persistently. That's a life of faith. I don't understand why things happen the way they do. I don't understand why so many things in my life go the way they go. But I can, by God's grace, live this vain, temporary, often frustrating, difficult to understand life in faith. That's the first thing Solomon shows us in 1 to 6. The rest of chapter 11, verses 7 through 10, live a life of joy. We have some people online listening. We don't have this message posted because of technical difficulties, all right? And I apologize for that. So I'm going to read verses 7 through 10, not only for that reason, but in part because of that reason. Let's look at chapter 11, verse 7 through 10, because what we look at in chapter 12 is just a continuation, in a sense, of this, to live a life of joy. Notice in chapter 11, beginning verse 7. First of all, the light is pleasant. It's good for the eyes to see the sun. There's a lot of good in this life. Enjoy it. Appreciate it. I had the joy of being at a graduation this Friday, watching many people graduate. There's two ways to think about it. You could think about it cynically. You could think, oh, they're so young, and yet they're headed for such suffering, and they don't even know it. You could look back on your life with great regret, and you could think, boy, I had such great plans, and many of them have not been fulfilled. Life has not gone the way I wanted it. Or you can just say, you know what? I have today. And God has given me things to be thankful for today. That's verse 7. The light is pleasant. It's good for the eyes to see the sun, verse 8. Indeed, if a man should live many years, let him rejoice in them all. But then verse 8, the second half, anticipate the darkness. And let him remember the days of darkness. They will be many. Everything that is to come will be futility. And so I call that second point, anticipate the darkness. We have today. Enjoy it. It's a gift from God. Darkness is coming. And that doesn't mean that should overwhelm you, because we still trust Christ. And take today, one day at a time, one step at a time, yet realizing difficulties will come, and we'll hit those in chapter 12 in just a little bit. You say, so Greg, what do? Verse 9, enjoy and obey, rejoice, young man. And remember, young man is anyone who's not in the category of chapter 12 we're going to talk about. The vast majority of the people in this room would be young. And even those of you who still think of yourselves as middle age would be considered young. And those of us who are on the other side of middle age, many of us, would still consider ourselves young in light of what we're going to see in chapter 12. But notice what the text says, during your childhood. And again, that other translations would translate that differently. Let your heart be pleasant during the days of young manhood and follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. That's a good thing to do. Enjoy life. And some of you enjoy gardening. Garden. And some of you enjoy hiking. Hike. And some of you enjoy exercising. Exercise. And some of you enjoy just sitting at home watching TV. Exercise. Okay? All right. And enjoy this life. Guys, the Christian life is not a life of asceticism. Ecclesiastes is not a call to let's all suffer for Jesus. Some of you enjoy cooking. Cook and make things. Some of you enjoy your pets, whatever they are. Enjoy your pets, okay? Fish, dogs, and others. And whatever might be in that category. But notice, it's not just enjoy, but it's enjoy and obey. Follow the impulses of your heart, the desires of your eyes, yet know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things. We are accountable. This is not a verse that teaches us just live a life of worldly partying and excess. But enjoy the life God has given you, realizing you're accountable to Him. And then it comes to the end, verse 10, remove grief and anger from your heart and put away pain from your body, because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. They're going by so quickly. So if we would call verses 1 and sit through 6 of chapter 11, live a life of faith, and 7 through 10 of chapter 11, live a life of joy, we now come to our final brief chapter, chapter 12 in Ecclesiastes. We'll simply call it live a life of godliness. Remember also, chapter 12, verse 1, remember also your Creator in the days of your youth. Remember your Creator. That's what Solomon Koheleth is encouraging us to do. Remember Yahweh. Remember the Lord. Now let's make sure we understand what the word creator means. When the Bible says remember, it's not talking about just a cognitive activity. Let me see if I can give you an example. If I said to my daughters, hey girls, remember Sunday is Mother's Day, and they said, yeah, Dad, we remember. And then next week I say, hey, did you get Nancy anything for Mother's Day? No. But I said, remember Mother's Day. And they're like, yeah, Dad, we remembered. We remembered Mother's Day. You know, we didn't forget. You know, we remembered. We didn't do anything. That's not what this verse is saying. This verse is not saying, remember your Creator. Yeah, okay, that's fine. In this idea of remember is a way to think on the Lord, meditate on Him, and in a way that influences how you live, so that your relationship with God is impacting and affecting how you go through this brief life. So with that in mind, remember your Creator. And you say, okay, why? Notice verse 1. In the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, when you will say, I have no delight in them. Our first point tonight, 3 points, simple. Live for the Lord. He's your Creator. You know, it's so easy for me, I think, for us to forget the Creator-creature relationship. And we so often fall into the trap, I think our language betrays it, that we often think that God is here for us. Again, graduation, I listen to many testimonies, and I want to be careful. Because we all use words in ways that I'm sure many times I'm speaking, and I wish I could go back and be more careful in my speech. And yet, having acknowledged that, I've heard a number of testimonies, even this past week. I am so glad God was there for me And every time I hear that, I think, Lord, help that person to know that you're not here for them. Help that person to know one day by your grace that actually they're here for you. Guys, God's not here for us. God created us for him. Colossians 1:15-16. He is the image of the invisible God, Jesus Christ, the firstborn of all creation, for by him all things were created. That's us. Things in the heavens and on the earth, things visible and invisible, everything, whether it be thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him. All things have been created for him. The Lord created us for him. We should remember him. Now, if I could get out of the context of Ecclesiastes, and I couldn't help but add 2 Corinthians 5:14-15, the love of Christ controls us, having concluded this one died for all, therefore all died, and he died for all so that they who live might no longer live for themselves, but for him who died and rose again on their behalf. We have even more than just the creator-creature distinction to encourage us to remember Christ, to live for Christ. It's the idea of the Christ died on a cross for us. He's not only our creator, we could say, he is our savior. And so we all should be very comfortable with however you choose to express it. One way would be the great question of the Westminster Shorter Catechism, right? What is the chief end of man? Man's chief end is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. You say, what does that mean? It means remember your creator. God created all of us to bring him glory. And so as we wrap up Ecclesiastes, what does Solomon say? Remember also your creator in the days of your youth. Now notice what he says. Before the evil days come. Evil days are coming. So that's not a moral evil as I would understand it. The world is very evil in a moral way. I don't think that's what it's talking about. I think it's talking about calamity. Difficulties that are coming. And I think the rest of the verse bears that out. And the years draw near when you will say, I have no delight in them. You say, what does that mean? Our second point tonight, live for the Lord now while you still can. Because there are dark storms on the horizon. So again, notice verse 1, before the evil days come, challenges, difficulties, years come near. There's coming a time when people will say, I have no delight in my years anymore. And in the context to come, we know that this is talking about growing old. Verse 2, before the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are darkened, and clouds return after the rain. So it's the idea that something very challenging is approaching. We could call these what? The storms of life. And it doesn't seem to be these are just come and go storms, because notice it says in verse 2, the clouds return after the rain. And not only that the sun and the light is darkened, but the moon and the stars are darkened. It seems to be that these are very great difficulties, challenges that people face. Young people face difficulties. And if you're going through life and maybe school doesn't go your way, a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship doesn't go your way, and you're in the midst of that, that's very difficult, that's very challenging, and it's going to get worse. It's going to get much worse. And so here is Solomon, and he's using storms to be an illustration. Think of you're kind of checking the weather, you're watching on the computer, whatever you do, and you keep getting your weather app buzzing, big storms coming, you know, alert. And that's what this chapter is supposed to do for us. Before the storms of life overwhelm, what kind of storms? Verses 3 through 8. Your body is wearing out, and you can't stop it. And there's nothing you can do to prevent it. So live for the Lord now, while you still can. before you're overwhelmed by great storms, before your body wears out. I'll never forget, this is a number of years ago. Now, I'm just ready to turn 60 here fairly soon. I remember when I was back, I'm guessing in my 30s, and I was preaching one day, and I still remember a brother from our church coming up to me, and he said something like, "Greg, you're limping a little bit." And I was playing tackle football. You know, my knee was just a little sore or whatever. And I said, "Yeah." And I just kind of jokingly said, "You know, old age has got me." And I'll never forget what he said. He said, wait till you turn 50. You will completely fall apart. And I remember thinking, is that true? Now, I'm in my 50s, and I don't believe that's true. But at the same time, I'm not playing tackle football anymore either, okay? So certainly we're making adjustments because our bodies are wearing out. You say, in what ways? We're going to hit now an incredibly wonderful poem that, as poetry goes, people will disagree on how they specifically interpret each of the phrases. And yet, most of the statements have a common interpretation that will continue to bring us back to the idea of life is going quickly and our bodies are failing, at least the first couple of verses using the illustration of a house. And it all goes back to emphasizing our vain bodies. Now, remember what vain means. Vain means what? Vapor. Our bodies, what? They're here for a little bit of time. And then health is gone. And it's frustrating. And it's difficult to understand. You say, what's it like, Greg? Well, let's pick it up in 12, verse 3. In the day that the watchmen of the house tremble. So here's a man. He's watching the house. He's strong. His arms are sturdy. No more. His arms tremble. You have seen older men with Parkinson's disease. You have seen people sometimes trying to hold their cup of coffee, and they shake like this, and they can't help it. And there was a day when they were strong, and maybe they worked outside or they worked out. Those days are past. The text says what? That in this day, the watchmen of the house tremble, and the mighty men stoop. There was a day when people would had strength in their legs, not only strength in their arms, but strength in their legs, but life catches up with you, and you don't have the strength to walk as you used to. You certainly aren't typically out there jogging, and let's be honest, for those who are older and jog, to everyone else, it looks like you're walking, okay? And I include me in that, okay? I was teasing, I was out jogging the other day, and there's a younger man, and he and his wife have been blessed with a second child. And I said, you're walking your baby in the stroller about as fast as I'm running, okay? And we laughed together because we were acknowledging the obvious. Here's a younger man and his young wife blessed with the second child. Once upon a time, we were there, and obviously those days are past. The mighty men stoop, and still in verse 3, the grinding ones stand idle because they are few. And here there are problems with teeth. And all of a sudden you have teeth that break for apparently no reason. And some of you, I know you're sitting there thinking, Greg, I just want to testify. God's word is true, right? I'm experiencing this, okay? Right after it says, the grinding ones stand idle because they are few, and those who look through the windows grow dim. We have failing eyes. I remember going to the eye doctor to get my bifocal transitions, and I can't remember how old I was. I think I was in my low 50s, and the doctor commended me. He said, Greg, I get very few people that can hit 50 without bifocals. That was a long time ago. And here I am with transitions, bifocals, whatever you call them. And some of you have told me that you would like to come out regularly on Sunday nights and worship with us, but because of the time of year and how the daylight changes, that there are times you don't come because you don't drive after dark anymore. And I have friends that are older that have told me that, and that's part of life. It's a reality. And our eyes begin to fail. The text continues even into verse 4. And the doors on the street are shut. You say, what does that mean? Many people think, most of these I would have thought of. Here's one that I wouldn't have, and after I read it and thought about it, it seemed to make a lot of sense. That here's a reference to recessed lips. Because this is a person who has few teeth. The teeth are failing. Remember, they didn't have dentists doing all the wonderful things that our dentists do for us today. So here is the doors on the street. Picture a street like your mouth. And the doors on the street are shut as the sound of the grinding mill is low. So because of a lack of teeth, we've all seen older people that don't have teeth, or maybe they have dentures, but they're not in. And we see how their lips are recessed. Perhaps the reference there, that this is what's happening in verse 4. The doors on the street are shut as the sound of the grinding mill is low. You say, why is the sound of the grinding mill low? Because this is that older person drinking his or her Ensure, I believe it's called. They can't chew food well anymore. Their bodies just don't permit it. And so there's not the sound of grinding because they simply don't have the ability to do that. So here there is, in the text, a limited diet. And then it goes on after it says the doors on the street are shut as the sound of the grinding mill is low, and one will arise at the sound of a bird, difficulty sleeping. And some of you maybe, if we have our teens here, you know, you guys sometimes maybe sleep till 10 a.m., 11 a.m., till noon. And your parents, and especially your grandparents, how do you do that? I wish I could do that. But you can't do that anymore. And you arise, the idea is you arise for any reason at all. And the end of verse 4, all the daughters of song will sing softly. It's kind of a paradox, right? Your hearing is not good anymore. And yet you wake up at the smallest noise. You know, every now and then one of my daughters will be talking to me, and I simply just can't hear them. Sometimes I'm out, for whatever reason, when there's many people talking, I find it a little more difficult to hear. And I'll be even in the lobby greeting you, which I'm very glad to have the opportunity to do, but sometimes people who are just harder for me to hear. And I have to double check with Nancy, what was that? And, you know, sometimes you're making guesses because I think you said this and I think that was good. So I go, yeah, yeah, praise the Lord. And I look in your eyes and I think, uh-oh, you're not praising the Lord. And I don't think I should have just agreed with that. But you kind of, you know, you don't want to embarrass people and say, I'm sorry, I can't hear you. And that's part of life. One of the challenges we face. And that's difficulty hearing. And it doesn't stop. Verse 5. Furthermore, men are afraid. And I don't think these are irrational phobias, but these are typical. Men are afraid of a high place. Many of you ladies, right, of married to men now getting older, you see your husband on a ladder. What are you doing? Right? Trimming a tree. Honey, what are you doing? You're not young anymore, right? And we lie. We're fine. You know, and even if you're on a ladder, terrified, you would never admit it to your wife, right? Honey, I'm fine. And the whole time you're thinking, Jesus, help me, right? Because men are afraid of a high place because our balance is not as good as it used to be. And then it goes on, and of terrors on the road. And there are the fears of just taking a journey. And you don't have the confidence you used to have, right? I mean, you're young, and what do? I remember being with friends. It's Friday night. What do you want to do? Let's jump on our motorcycles. Where do you want to go? Oh, I don't know. Niagara Falls. Why not? How far is that? About 3.5-4 hours away. Right? Do you check your tires? Not really. Do you know where you're going to stay? Not really. Right? What are you going to do? I'm going to ride my motorcycle, right? And you go. And you get older. I remember being with my dad just the recent summer, and I was taking him for a ride. He wanted to go to one of the big warehouse stores, and we went to Home Depot. And he said, Greg, okay, to go home. He tells me every turn, that's fine. He's my dad. Greg, turn here. No, don't park there. That's fine, Dad. We can do it. Okay, Greg, I don't like to pull out here. I like to exit this way. That's okay, Dad. That's the way we'll exit. And then finally we exited the way he wanted, and I realized he did not know where he was, and he was very confused. And he thought he was at Lowe's when we were at Home Depot or vice versa. And he's like, Greg, I don't know what happened. I'm not sure where. Dad, take a breath. Slow down, right? And it's just, Siri, take me home. And wow, you know, and we get home. But that was a little bit upsetting for him, because in an area he's lived many, many years, he got confused. And that happens. Right? That's part of life. And we experience these kinds of fears. It keeps going on. And it says the almond tree blossoms. A reference there to the hair becoming white as we progress through age. And then the grasshopper drags himself along, right? A grasshopper, kind of springy, right? And just it moves quickly and even gracefully perhaps, but no longer so. Because here's this grasshopper hit by old age, dragging itself along, and then depending on your translation, and the caperberry is ineffective, and there is a failure of desire. I'll just read it in the NLT. You drag along without energy like a dying grasshopper, and the caperberry no longer inspires sexual desire. That too begins to pass. And then it continues, for man goes to his eternal home while mourners go about in the street. So verse 6, remember him. Remember your creator before the silver cord is broken. A reference there, most would believe, to death. The spinal cord is broken and the golden ball is crushed. Many believe that would be a reference to the brain. So as a spinal cord works in the central nervous system with the brain, maybe pictured by a silver cord holding this golden bowl, a lamp, and here the cord is severed, and the lamp, the bowl, is crushed, and it can't be repaired. It simply can't. And then it goes on. The pitcher by the well is shattered. And so here is this picture. Many people believe it would be the heart. And just like the heart could be roughly seen as a picture, maybe it looks roughly like that, certainly involved in liquids, in transporting liquids, the pitcher by the well is shattered, and the wheel at the cistern is crushed. Wheel at the cistern. Some believe that could be a water wheel. That's perhaps the case. Or maybe a wheel that would hold the cord that would lower the vessel, the vase, into the well to get the water. Either way, this idea of our circulatory system being wrapped all around veins, arteries, carrying blood throughout the body. And this is not news. This is nothing new for you. The goal of this poem is not for you to go, seriously. Seriously, this happens to people. I didn't know that. It's not the goal. The goal is for you to realize this is coming sooner than you think. And it's easy for us to read this. I don't mean to embarrass anybody. I'm looking at some of the people here in the front row, some of our college students. And it's so easy for you guys to think, you know, this is true of my grandparents. True. But blink and it'll be true of your parents. Blink again and it'll be true of you. It's not the idea that you need to think about this because you've never thought about it. It's the idea you need to think about it because it's coming much more quickly than you realize. This life is so brief. It's just a vapor. And it's gone. And so number one, live for the Lord. He's your creator. Live for the Lord now while you still can. And the final point for tonight, live for the Lord right now. Because your earthly life is just a vapor. Notice verse 7 and 8, the last two verses tonight. Verse 7. Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to the God who gave it. The dust will return to the earth. There's coming a time where our bodies will be nothing but dust. And we do return to the earth. Now, you don't want to get overly, again, discouraged, depressed, overly anxious by that. That's reality. Deal with it. Acknowledge it. And know that it's right around the corner. But the Spirit will return to God who gave it. Yes, Solomon here, Koheleth, believes in a life after death. Absolutely. But before we know it, guys, the dust will return to the earth. Just this weekend, we've learned of a brother who passed away. We'll have his memorial service in just a couple weeks here. Thankfully, he put his faith in Christ just a few years before he passed, and we praise God for that. Nancy and I were talking. I don't know what your home is like, but we were talking about the plans, and he's going to be cremated, which is fine, not a problem. And so... The idea was then his widow would like to maybe spread his ashes in certain places. And Nancy and I were talking, and she said, "What do you think of that?" I said, "I don't care. You know, it's his ashes." I said, "Who cares? I don't care." And so I said to her, "Hey, honey, if I'm cremated, what would you do with my ashes?" She said, "Nothing." I said, "Well, would you take them maybe up to the Blue Ridge Parkway where I like to ride? Would you take them to one of those favorite mountains where I like to take my motorcycle?" She said, "No." I said, "Why not?" She said, "Because I'm not wasting my time, Greg. It's a complete waste of time. They're your ashes. It's not you. You won't know anyhow. I'm not doing it." Okay? I said, "Okay." I said, "If I get cremated, will you take my ashes and throw them in the backyard?" She said, "Yeah, I'll do that. I don't care. At least it'll fertilize something, right? It's fine." But she said, "One thing I won't do," and I got to be careful because death is obviously a serious thing. She said, "I'm just going to tell you something. One thing I'm not going to do is I'm not going to be one of those people who keeps the ashes. Because you're with Jesus. And those are just ashes. And they don't matter anymore." She said, "Maybe I'll throw them under a tree. That's fine. That's all we're going to do." Okay? And now you might say, "You guys have weird conversations," okay? I don't know. You know, this we talk about things like this. And I think it's a good thing. Because the dust will return to the earth as it was. And the spirit will return to the God who gave it. And beloved, if your faith is in Jesus Christ, this is not a sad ending. This is a trip in which you may not take pleasure. But I promise you that the ultimate destination is wonderful. And maybe think of just visiting that favorite person, whoever that would be. Maybe for some of you grandparents, I know it would perhaps be your grandchildren. And you take that long drive or that long flight and you so much want to see them. And you struggle a little bit. And the trip is hard, and the older you get, the more difficult it gets to take that trip, but you get to see your children, your grandchildren, or whatever loved one you're going to see. And it's like, "I am so glad to be here." And that's the journey for the believer in Jesus Christ. And so what do? We get finally down to verse 8. "Vanity of vanities," says the preacher. All is vanity. That's your life. It's a vapor. It's quick. It's gone. It's frustrating. It's frequently difficult to understand. But here we are at the end of the book, chapter 12, verse 8, which takes us right back to the beginning, chapter 1 and verse 2. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. I'll read a quote out of a commentary. All of Kohelet's words are to be understood in the context beginning in chapter 1, verse 2, and ending in chapter 12, verse 8. The context of the closing remarks makes it particularly clear, however, that meaningless is not a good translation of the Hebrew word hevel. For the whole thrust of this book is that life is a precious gift to be enjoyed, even though the days of our life are brief. I suggest a better translation of this text. Fleeting, fleeting, says Kohelet. Everything is fleeting. And it is. So let's wrap up. How shall we live our brief lives? Number one, storms are on the horizon. This life is a vapor. Some of you, the storms have already hit. And your health is not good. But for those that are younger, so the storms are coming. You are going to end up, apart from Christ coming back or something quick happen, you're going to end up perhaps in a nursing home of some type. And staying away from those places will not change your destination. I talk to young people who don't like to go to nursing homes. They won't even see their own grandparents. And I think, don't you understand, one day that's going to be you. And that's reality. It's as real as a cloud on the horizon. The storm's coming. You can deny it. It doesn't change reality. Our life is a vapor. Living in denial is not helpful, nor, may I suggest, is it Christ-like. So number one, the storms are on the horizon. This life is a vapor. Number two, so enjoy today. It's God's gift to you. Accept what God brings into your life. Don't fight it. And don't demand to understand it. I've heard so many people say throughout their vain life, Greg, I just have to know. I just have to know. Is it asking too much to know? Why is this happening? And let me give you the biblical response in one word. Yes, it is asking too much. God is not required to explain his ways. And we've spent a lot of time in that back in chapter 3, right? He has set eternity into the heart of every man so that man will not understand what is to come. We can't understand. And to demand an explanation is not humility. It is pride. So here we are today. You have today. Enjoy it. Don't dwell on the sufferings of the past. This room is filled with people. You've been through very painful events. And you can choose to disobey God and live in the past. Or you can follow Christ and say, Lord, thank you for today. It's a gift from you. Those who live in the past are not living for Christ today. It's a spiritual issue. Don't dwell on the past, beloved. Secondly, don't be anxious about the future. You say, Greg, this old age thing has me thinking. Now I'm nervous. No, 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 no. Solomon doesn't remind us of what's coming, so we'll all be overwhelmed with anxiety over what's coming. It's to remind us that you have today. Enjoy it. Enjoy today as God's gift to you. And finally, number three, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Because you're going to give an account. Again, no plea for asceticism here. You can't read this and get, wow, my life is short. I guess I better turn my back on everything fun. No more gardening for me. No more cooking for me. No more whatever, exercising for me. No more sports for me. You can't get that out of Ecclesiastes. Embrace life as a gift from God. And as your health allows, enjoy it. You will give an account in a way that's godly. Yeah. Tomorrow morning, Lord willing, right? I'm hitting summer. Graduation just came. And Lord willing, tomorrow morning, I'll get with my wonderful, lovely wife. And we'll enjoy a cup of coffee together. We'll get with another couple. We'll hit the bikes. And we'll go ride in the hills of Georgia for the day. Wonderful. I'm excited about it. Isn't God good? Isn't God good that I'd have the opportunity to do that? And there are some brothers in this congregation who've said, Greg, I used to enjoy that kind of thing, but my life is not at the place where I don't have the physical ability to do that. I understand that, and that's coming very quickly. And I'm not anxious about that, but I'll take tomorrow as a gift from God. And by his grace, if he wills, enjoy it. And I wish that for you. And that's God's desire for you. Each day, not stuck in the past, not anxious about the future, but seeking to live a godly life. I close with this simple reminder, and I hope it makes sense. Next Sunday, if I'm thinking right, is Mother's Day. You know what that means? That means if you're going to get something for your mom and actually hand it to her, you have, what, 6 days? If mom's out of town and you're going to send her something, what do you have? A day or two. And then you ship it. Maybe three at best. That's all you have. So do you want to enjoy buying your mom something that would encourage her and be a blessing to her while you still have a mom? As many of you do, not all. You have this much time. That's all. And what do? You can take advantage of it and maybe tonight go online, maybe tomorrow go to the store and get your mom something for Mother's Day. But you know what, beloved? You got like this much time and it's gone. And Mother's Day is gone. And before you know it, your mom's going to be gone. You got that much time. If you want to remember your mom, there's not much time left. And if you want to remember your Creator, there's really not much time left. And that should not lead you to depression. That should lead you to thanking God for the gift of today and praying, Lord, help me this day to live a life that would be pleasing to you. It's so brief, but may I enjoy it, realizing I will give an account. Father, by your grace, would you help us to remember you during this brief vapor of a life? By God's grace, may it be so.